Session number 20590, Reel 8.
Norman Smith, Reel 8.
Sorry, Norman Mitchell.
Who's Norman Smith? Norman Mitchell, Reel 8. So back to civilian life.
Yeah.
I mean, how long did it take you to get a job?
Not more than about a month. I was working long before my service time was up. See, like, whilst I was finishing the army 21st of July, I came out about 6 weeks before. But I had 6 weeks leave to come, and that was it, yeah. I think it took me about a fortnight or so, 3 weeks to find this job as assistant transport manager for coal merchants, yeah. On a princely salary of £275 a year. It was very good at that time, I can assure you. Yeah.
So you had a lot of adjustments to make, because you'd been living in communal accommodation, in a separate world from the civilians. So had been living their own way through
it's slight changes, I expect, with bombing, if they were in a place with bombing. Yeah.
So what was it like coming back?
I was amazed at how easy it was to settle in. I still look back now and think how remarkable it was that for a whole trouble we were out knocking 40 shades of hell out of everything and killing any, well, not that exactly, but always killing everything that moved. And you come back into Sevilla and you're supposed to settle back in just like that. And I did. But it's remarkable to me. I mean, they wouldn't do it nowadays. They'd have to have counselling. Which, I mean, I'll tell you, it goes down a bit grotty with the likes of us. Yeah. When you can be out in a place, well, in the, I have every respect for them that were in the Gulf. And this Gulf syndrome, I think there is something in it. But the ordinary ones that have got to come back, they've been in action, a fortnight, and come back and want counselling. I think, good God, where are we going? Dear, out you go and get on with it, you know.
How did people treat you when you came back?
I don't think they treated me any. They didn't look upon me as that I'd done anything out of the ordinary, you know? No. The company I joined was a very coal company. It was a very, very old-fashioned one, and very staid, you know. When he's been in the army, hadn't he? Well, he's a little bit rough at the moment, isn't he? Oh, he'll smooth out. Yeah.
So did you feel that you got, you know, in your own head at the time, that you got enough acknowledgement for what you'd done?
No. Never will. Not from this country. No. But I've more than made up with it elsewhere.
Do you think the Armistice Day each year, do you think that's, I mean, that's quite a national event.
Yeah.
Does that show you, you know, does that not feel...
Well, I don't think it does. No, it does. It's the right thing. It should be done, yeah. But I think it only commemorates those that died. Mm. I don't think it does anything for us.
What would you want? I don't
know. Yeah. I don't know. I have an open mind on it. Mm. But I thought we would be entitled to a little more recognition than we got. All I got was 4 medals. Oh, and the French Liberation Medal as well, which I must mention. They very generously gave us. I think the attitude here is, well, it was a job no more than you ought to have done. Now, you're going to Holland. I know I'm prejudiced. You go into the Dutch, and the atmosphere is totally different. They can't do enough for you. And, you can see all my... This is all results of Dutch doings. Yeah. That's Sir Togan Bosch up there, the old one. And there's the scroll presented by the city fathers of Den Bosch there with I don't know who wrote that, but it wasn't a Dutch one. Mm. And then over there is the towns just outside of Sertogen Bosch, where we attacked. You can see the church. Yeah. And then nothing's too much trouble for them. We finished now. Mm. Last
how
year.
How do they treat you, though? I mean, how do they treat you differently?
Oh.
I mean, apart from thanking you and giving you presents.
Stop you in the street and chat and say, thanks ever so much, you're awfully pleased with what you do. Even the youngsters. They see, even the young ones, yeah.
Amazing.
And you go into the shops as well. They all speak English. It's another good thing. Even the shop assistants. And they love using it, unlike the French. French can speak English as well as you or I can, but they won't. Mm.
So, what do you think the mental effects of going to war have been on you?
Made me grow up rather quickly. And know how to look after yourself in tight situations.
Do you think it damaged you? I mean, you saw a horrible thing.
I think it... I look back and wonder what would have happened if I hadn't got called up. Mm. I was at Bristol University for that 2 years, and I used to work 3 days a week. We used to study, and 2 days a week we used to be involved with the Grow More Food campaign of soil, grass, milk analysis. We should do in the laboratory, which the men of Ag and Fish used to press the princely sum of £1.16, which wasn't bad money. Yes, I worked in a little laboratory there in Berkeley Square in the Bristol. Yeah.
So, what do you think your life might have been like if you hadn't gone in the army then?
Well, if I'd have made the grade, I should have ended up with a BSc after 5 years, and we would have worked for the men of Ag and Fish. That assumes everything had gone the right way. Yeah. Yeah.
Would you have been better off that way?
Oh, yes. Mm. Yeah.
A lot?
I shouldn't be living here. Right. Hmm? No. Right. Yeah. Well, because I invested in a pension fund that went bust, the company went broke, and all I could do then was, like, the house, I own my own house in Thatcham. All we could do then was to sell that, and the capital, I owned it, there's no more, and the 55,000 I got for that is my pension fund. Well, the interest, which we earn, well, in wife's name, obviously, because of the tax problem, and in my name, the balance, you see. So, and that's how if we'd have stayed in the house we had, it would mean I've had to work full-time until I dropped, you know. That was it, yeah.
So being in the army cost you money?
It cost, yes. And the £85 they paid me didn't make up for it.
you don't get any sort of war pension or anything?
The only thing I've had from the government was about, how long ago was it? I forget how long ago it was now. I think it must be about 7 or 8 years ago when I was having trouble with this ear. Mm. And someone suggested that I should write to the social services Blackpool and said that I was having ear trouble. They sent me to have an examination, and I find that I've got a 14%, I think 14 to 16% hearing loss in that ear caused by explosions in the turret, you know, something. And they made me not entitled to a pension, but a one-off payment of £3,156. This is only an interim payment, and it will be reconsidered in 4 years' time. In 4 years' time, they wrote to me and said, in view of the fact that your hearing has not got any worse, there are no further funds available. And I wrote back and said, well, how do you know that it's not got any worse? He said, well, you haven't complained. So I let it go. No, it's not bad. It's not bad. Dear.
Did you ever dream about your time?
Yeah. If I see something on here, if I see a program on here connected with either the Second World War or Falklands, or something like that. I can have a rough night.
So they're not pleasant dreams?
Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't, yeah. Sometimes they're good times I've had, sometimes times I can't remember that I don't even know about. Now, the result of that, for the last 30 years, my wife and I haven't slept together. We've separate beds. Mm. As I can be very restless.
Yeah.
And so we've had twin beds now for, I said, like the last 12, 14 years, yeah. Mm. I mean, I sometimes have, it doesn't happen very often, but it does. Just once now again, I get a bit of a spasm.
But it's television programmes that...
Look, that will set it off, okay, or, you know, if there's something in the paper, that'll set it. Not necessarily. It doesn't automatically happen. But just occasionally it'll crop up, yeah.
Is it sort of sad memories or...?
It varies. Yeah. It varies. Some of the good times we've had, you know, the I get back into Lille occasionally and have a few a few bevies, but as I say, there were some bad times, but the pleasant memories we've had, I think we tend to outweigh the bad times. The bad times are when you get all these guys you knew going all in the same three or four days, and I found that was that really was shook us rigid, yeah.
So, getting a lot of casualties in one squadron, I mean, that's... How was it handled? How did the officers handle that? Did they...
Well, the second in command just gave up.
How
Peter Coburn, who wrote that book, was a squadron commander. He got wounded. And his second in command was Captain Blackie. Blackie took over. But when all this happened, he literally went to pieces. And that was when Davidor Goldsmith, you hear me talk about, was then transferred from B Squadron to take over C Squadron to get a grip on it, yeah. And he was the right man to do it, yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah, old Captain Blackie, I remember him, yeah, absolutely. Mm. He just couldn't face it.
No. So when you had those heavy casualties, did any of the officers or the NCOs talk to you men?
No.
Lack of information?
Never discussed.
No.
Well, you see, we lost quite a few officers at that time, yeah. And in command, as I say, Captain Blackie, well, it hit him.
Yeah.
Because he was in command. Mm.
So, you mentioned having lunch with an officer once.
Well, Timber.
I mean, how
Timber.
Separate were the
Oh, completely. The completely separate, yeah. The only time that we lived, the only time we lived with Frank was when we were on that week in North Brussels. And he literally stayed in the same house as us. But that's the only time.
Do you think it was right that they ate differently?
It depended on who it was. Depending on the character of the person. Some people could, like Frank, could live with you, and you'd be, the respect you had for him, for who he was okay. Now there are others that, let's be frank with you.
The British Army is one of the most rigid like that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it might be, yeah.
It wouldn't be like that in the American.
Oh, God, they no respect the officers at all. Huh? Christian name terms and... I don't know, I like that somehow. The one oboe we had was Lieutenant Lovell. You know Lovell's of Newport, Toffees?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's one of them, yeah. He's the funniest guy going. Well, we used to call him Toffee. I mean, it's... anyway, very odd character, him. And then...
He was an officer, wasn't he?
Yeah, Lieutenant, yeah. Ken Wilson. It was the assault troop commander. He was great. He eventually got knocked about something shocking and eventually had to have a plate put in his head. I don't know if he's still alive or not. There was him. There was... who else was there? Well, Lieutenant Pounder. Alan Pounder. Who I met up with after the wreck had been disbanded. I met up with him in the North Irish Horse and then lost him altogether. Then he went somewhere else. Peter Coburn, the one that wrote this book, took over as squad leader, basically squad. And he did all the training courses at the end of the war, which they opened up in Solingen. Olegs, you could go for courses there in maths or whatever you wanted. I took German. I didn't need any maths training. I decided to take a crash course in spoken German. And I thought, well, if I'm going to be here for another 18 months, 2 years, which it could have been, I want to be able to get around, you know, and that's it. And I found it useful. Found it very useful, yeah.
So which of the skills that you learned in the army were useful to you in peace in, back in the UK?
Oh God, difficult one. Very difficult one that, I don't know. I think it taught me self-reliance. Because I was a young, very inexperienced young, very, very young lad when I went in. As I say, I'd lived a very rigid household, extremely disciplined and rigid, you know. So, you know, one wasn't allowed to express one's opinion, not too vehemently. And so one literally, that was a thing that was quite done at the time. I mean, Jean's family was the same. But
I suppose you learnt driving, didn't you?
Oh, you learnt to drive, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Organisational ability,
I suppose.
Working as a team.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Working with others, yeah.
But no shortage of those in the immediate post-war years, probably.
Of what?
Of those skills, you know.
Not really. No, no. Cause I stayed with the a coal company. I stayed with them for 3 years and got fed up with it, and then I joined the Lever organisation. Then trained as a salesman and. I then moved from Bristol to Swindon, and I operated, sold Persil. God, look at that, eh? Persil, how many packets of that I sold? I don't know, millions. And in the area of, what, Wiltshire, North Wiltshire and East Gloucestershire, an area which I worked in. We lived at Swindon. Then I moved up to Highworth, which is a little town up the road. I then got fed up with them because they were the only people they were promoting. You had to have a degree. You had to be, yes. The Unilever policy changed, and so about six of us said, "Well, you know, I've been there 15 years. If that's all our service is worth to you, thank you very much. Where are you going?" "Oh dear, no. Take a month off and think about it." "No, no. Take a month off. You still think the same." And six of us left, just like that. The senior salesman, yeah. And I then went out and sold for myself. That was when I took out all the money out of the Unilever pension fund and put it into this other thing, and that went broke. Yeah, after years, yeah, because I did. Quite a few years selling giftware. A company that I used to work for imported from mainland China, communist China. We used to sell all the things over here. And then in 1970, I joined a company called Ben Sayers. Are you a golfer?
Yeah.
No. Well, if you were, you'd know Ben Sayers. They were a golf company. And I was their southern regional representative for mid-South Wales and the west of England, the Channel Islands. And I did that for about 15 years. Fabulous job.
Yeah.
Played a lot of golf. Played a lot of golf.
Mm. So were your years in the army, were they the best years of your life?
Oh, I couldn't say that. No. I'd like to be able to say it, but one has to look at the 12-month of drama. Post-traumatic stress. No. That kills me. In our days, the excuse all of us are used to, I was stressed, wasn't invented then, which I think is about right.
So, you enjoyed it then?
What?
Your time in the army,
On the whole, it wasn't that bad. But, as I said, I could have done without it, technically, yeah. But then once again, I think that all depends on the frame of mind and the attitude. If you're going with the army and you say, well, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, and I'm going to fight them, well, you're a loser. But if you just keep your head above water and you're not too ambitious, and I certainly wasn't awfully that ambitious then, whereas I may have, I'm now, yes, I'd be very ambitious, I'd go in for the lot. But in those days, no, I look back and think, oh, well, no, come on. I'll stick with the lads, you know. That was it. Mm. All in all, I suppose we didn't have too bad a time.
Yeah. Anything you want to add? I've got to the end of my question.
In what respect?
Any respect to do with your military service, really?
I don't think so. I don't think it would have... I don't think they could have done it any different at the time in view of the urgency of the situation. I still think that some of the younger lads that came out later into the to Overlord Operation, you know, the Northern Invasion, should have been better trained.
Right. Okay.
But if you go in 76 weeks infantry training and then stick them straight out, that I think was wrong. Now that may not have been, I don't know, but the impression one got that was to that effect, that they hadn't had the same training that I had. Not that I don't know that it made me a better soldier, but I think it made me a bit more experienced, I think. And
right, okay. Norman Mitchell, thank you very much indeed. And that's the end of Reel 8.